I said yesterday, I know that this day is a day that wears an awful lot of people out, and they have a hard time staying awake. The mind is really on when we're going to eat, which is understandable. I think God did that for a reason, so that we would focus in on and make ourselves focus in on what His Son is all about. And that's what the day of Yom Kippurim is really all about. It's about His Son and what His Son does, and what His Son did, and what He performed. And He went through a tremendous amount, quote, affliction. And so here on this day of Yom Kippurim, in Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, we're going to read a little bit here, starting in verse 26. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, also on the 10th of the 7th month shall be a day of atonement, or a day of covering. That's the actual technical word. Purim. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. And you shall do no work on that same day, for it is a day of Yom Kippurim, to make some make atonement for you before the Lord your God. For any person who is not afflicted on that same day, he shall be cut off from his people. And any person who does any work on that same day, that person will be destroyed from among his people. You shall do no matter of work. It shall be a statute forever. It shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls. And on the 9th day from the month unto the evening of the month, evening to evening. So it means from the evening of the 9th day at evening time, when the sun goes down, that's when you begin to afflict your souls. And you all the way to the next following evening, which means the whole day of the 10th month. And so it's not really that hard to understand. But on the other hand, sometimes we need to understand what the purpose of it is all about. So with that in mind, there is a place in the Bible, of course, most of you already know, that talks about a very special time. And we sometimes read it and we get a good picture of it. I want to read it again, because this is through a due season. This particular chapter of Leviticus, the 16th chapter, is a time when Moses was told for the high priest to enter into the Holy of Holies. And he only did it once a year. And it's kind of important that we know it's done once a year, because that means it'll never be done again in the future. It's a picture of something that's going to happen in the future. Leviticus 16th chapter, starting in verse 1. And Yahuwah spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered before Yahuwah and died. I'm not going to go back in there and read why they died, but they did something contrary to what God had them in mind to do. But we won't go there today. And Yahuwah said to Moses, speak unto Aaron, thy brother, that he may not at all times go into the Holy of Holies within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not. For I will appear on the cloud upon the mercy seat. Thus shall Aaron come into the Holy of Holies with a young bull, a sin offering, and a ram for whole offering. He shall put on holy linen coat, and he shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh, and he shall gird himself with a linen girdle, and with the linen mitre he shall be attired with these holy garments. Therefore shall he wash his flesh in water and put them on. So he had to be clean. We'll put on these holy garments. We went into detail about them a few months ago. And he shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of goats for sin offering and a ram for whole offering. That's 2 goats and 1 ram. And Aaron shall make an offering of his bullock that he has for the sin offering, which is for himself, and make a covering of kippurim for himself and for his house. Now, this word in Hebrew, as I said before, is kafur, and it really means a verb, meaning to cover, to hide, shall we say, to make something appear, not appear, something that will be removed, covered up, and not be seen again. Basically, that's what it's all about. Something is going to be removed by a different process than what we think of just physical covering. When they do the physical covering of their hands upon these things, it's a physical thing, but we have to find out what it is for and why it must be for. So basically, it's to cover or to purge. And also, like I said yesterday, to make reconciliation. He, verse 7, shall take the 2 goats, present them before Yahuwah at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Remember, the tabernacle is the dwelling place where God lives. And therefore, that's what happens. That's what he's going to do. He's going to present, take these 2 goats. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the 2 goats. 1 lot for Yahuwah and the other lot for the scapegoat. Remember what I told you what that word means yesterday? Let's go back and remember what it means. It's made up of 2 words. The first part of it is meaning a goat. The last part, azel, it comes from a Hebrew word. It means to separate or to depart or basically to remove something. Take it away. Disappear. It's gone. So when you use the word scapegoat, something is being taken away. Verse 9, and Aaron shall bring the goat upon which Yahuwah's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. Remember, the ram was one thing, but now this first one of the goats is used for a sin offering. Now, this makes sense to our thinking, but one does die. All right? But the goat which the lot fell upon, the scapegoat, shall be presented alive before Yahuwah to make a kippurim with him. To let him go for a scapegoat into wilderness, a place where people don't live, a separate location, a separate part, removal. We've read about these goats before and about the sin offering, and we see that one of them is not to be killed and the other one is. Now, this is a function that God wants us to try to understand and see why. And the Day of Atonement, or the Day of Yom Kippurim, it is a completion. It is a conclusion. It's the end of. It's a separation from, not joining with. And you come here to understand. Verse 11. And Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make a covering, or make a yom kippurim, for himself and for his household, and shall kill the bullock of sin offering which is for himself and his family. He shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off of the altar before Yahuwah, and his hands full of sweet incense, beaten small, real fine, real small, and bring them into the veil. Now he's got this burning coal in his hand, or in, not in his hand, but his handful of it, but it's in a censer, and it's beaten real small. He's going to bring it into the veil with the hot coal. He shall put the incense upon the fire before Yahuwah, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat. Remember what he said? I will sit on the mercy seat. I will be a cloud. And here is a symbolism of something that belongs to God. God is telling us that when he goes in there, he, Aaron, the high priest, is going to ignite that incense. And that incense is going to turn into a cloud. For the Lord lives in a cloud. Remember? During Moses' time, he was in the cloud. We also know this thing from the prophets, that the Lord will come in a cloud. Yes.
The two goats, is that in a picture of his death and resurrection?
No. We'll get there. But it's not about the death and resurrection. Not what this is picturing. This is not picturing death and resurrection. The Day of Atonement pictures something being removed from something. Something being taken away. Something being no longer part of. That once was a part of. The children of Israel must bring these two goats. These two goats do not represent except one thing. One represents a sin offering. The other represents a covering. Okay? So we have God looking down. And he wants us to understand why he's doing this. So we have to find out ourselves, what is it? And so we have to walk into this thing very carefully and read what it says and try to understand completely. Which is upon the testimony that he dies not. So he makes the cloud. Right? And which represents the one who sits upon that throne. Now it must be the high priest that does this. No one else can do this. We'll see this. And then shall he kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and bring his blood or its blood within the veil, and do with the blood that he has did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. So it's in front of it and in front of it. Remember, the mercy seat is gold. Right? Golden archangels. And the ark itself is gold. So right there, we're before the very throne of God. Picturing a picture of something that he had then designed so we can see about something about God. What God is doing. What God is acting upon. What is he going to do in the future, for these are shadows of things to come. All right? Verse 16. And he shall make an atonement or a covering for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of the transgressions of all of their sins. And so they shall do. And they shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation. Remember, the tabernacle congregation is whose house? Whose house? God's house. This is my dwelling place. Not the dwelling place of Israel. It's not a dwelling, but this is the dwelling place. This is my dwelling place. And I want the congregation to come for an appointment. Now, because actually in Hebrew, that word for congregation is to come to the place of appointment. Come to Moed. So when he's coming here, he's coming to do a Moed, an appointment. And so he showed the tabernacle congregation, which remains among them in the midst of their uncleanness. I remember the tabernacle, the dwelling place where God lives, was still with them, and he, God's dwelling place, it was amongst the unclean. That's what it says. Isn't that not what it says? In the midst of their uncleanliness. Now, to our mind, that doesn't sound right. Why would God, the creator of heaven and earth, have a picture of himself at this point in time about Yom Kippurim? I am going to dwell amongst the unclean. I thought he'd only dwell amongst the clean. Right? So what is this showing us? He is going to do something with the uncleanliness. I told you yesterday, from chapter 9 in Leviticus to the 15th chapter of Leviticus, it's all about what is clean, what is unclean, constantly through all those chapters. What's clean, what's unclean, what's clean, what's unclean, and all the situations of what's clean and what's unclean. And there's an awful lot of uncleanness there. Now we're in the 16th chapter. Now God's going to do something about that uncleanliness. Why? Because he's dwelling, his home is in the midst of the unclean. That's what it says, right? You ever thought about that? Well, that's what's written. Verse 17. And there shall be no man in the tabernacle, a congregation, no man there will be at my dwelling place at all, except he that goes in to make an atonement. Who goes in to make the atonement? Only one man. The high priest. There is no second witness. No one saw or recorded seeing what was going on. Only the high priest was to see what was going on and to do what was to be done. He was doing something that was not seen for the unclean. The unclean couldn't see what the high priest is doing. And what is the high priest doing? He's making a covering for them. He's making atonement for them. He's doing something for them for their benefit, because why? God's dwelling place is amongst the unclean. So he has to clean up the unclean. Now we already read yesterday, 2 days ago, how God is going to do that. And we understand how it was done. And by and through his Messiah walking through. We'll talk about a little bit about that today. Until he comes out and have made an atonement for himself and for his household and for the congregation of Israel. So the high priest being flesh, he had also do it for himself. This is a one-man show. He should go out in the altar, which is before Yahuwah, and make an atonement for it, and shall make the blood of the bullocks and the blood of the goat and put it upon the horns of the altar round about. We won't go into which altar. Just the main altar. He shall sprinkle the blood upon it and its fingers 7 times. 1, 2, 3. Goes in. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 times. Now he's the only one doing it. No one else is there. We've put an end to all this. reconciliating, bringing back, restoring the Holy of Holies, the tabernacle congregation, and the altar, he shall bring in the live goat. What is he going to do with that live goat? Remember, only Aaron is seeing what's going on. Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquity, let's put it in English, all the perverseness of the children of Israel and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat, and shall set it away to set away by a fit man into the wilderness. Somebody else, now he has to take this goat out, because no one else allowed to be in the tabernacle. He has to take that goat out, give it to someone who is to take that goat and take it somewhere where nobody lives. And the goat shall bear upon him all the perverseness in the land and not inhabited. In a land that is not inhabited. So what do we see here so far? What's going on? Sometimes we look in our life and we think, oh, it's just the sin offering that took away my sins. Okay, sounds good, doesn't it? How does God, who lives amongst the unclean, how does he get their house to be unclean? How does he get their home to be unclean? Let's see, a statement.
The blood of
the live goat. He got rid of the live goat, took something away from the unclean people. What would made the people unclean? Sin, transgressions, and iniquities. All three. One just got rid of sin. The other gets rid of all three. The perverseness, the wanting to do and the desire to do, and you fight hard, but it's still there in your home. It's still there in their home. It's still in our, we have in our world, we don't like to admit it, we don't like to see it, we don't want to even think about it, but guess what? Our home is not clean. Our house is not clean. It takes a long time for the perverseness and the cleaning to be completely removed. Now, sometimes we hope it's all gone. We never have to think about another rotten thing. Never speak evil about anybody whatsoever, because it doesn't exist anymore in our world. We hope that we never have to ever accidentally break the commandment of the Sabbath, let's say. Or accidentally, or actually maybe deliberately break the Sabbath because you have to work. That makes you unclean. Right? Makes you not dwell where God is dwelling. But God is dwelling amongst the unclean. What does he want? Do you see a picture here? I hope we can understand something about this. This is a very, very important part. Let's drop down to verse 30. For on that day, the priest shall make an atonement for you to cleanse you, talking about all the house of Israel, that you may be clean from all your sins before Yahuwah. Now, one of those goats was an atonement goat. Was the atonement goat the one that got killed? Or was the atonement goat the one that lived? The one that lived. So the life of that goat was cursed. The life of the other goat is dead. Life of the living goat was cursed, never to dwell ever again with the house of Israel. Now that's a picture. We understand that, I hope. What Jeff spoke yesterday about pictures in the book of Hebrews is extremely fascinating. I want to go there. And I'm going to read a little differently part of the book of Hebrews. Not that Jeff left out. Jeff did exactly what he was supposed to do, and he did a really good job. I told him I couldn't outperform him on that if I tried. That's very good, though. So we're going to go back to the book of Hebrews. And guess what chapter? 10. Same chapter he was in there yesterday, right? Starting in verse 1. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come. Now we have to say, which law is he talking about? All of them? It's a singular word here. And not the very image of the things that can never, with the same sacrifices which they offered continually, year by year, make those who approach perfect. How often is this time occurring in the Bible? He says year by year, not day by day, not hour by hour, not season by season, but year by year. This year and the following year, and the following year, same time, same time, same time, same time. Listen, the book of 10th chapter is about Day of Atonement. For then would they not have ceased to be offered if it worked. If during a time when Aaron did it for the first time, if it worked, they would never, ever, ever, ever have to ever, ever, ever offer a sin offering ever, ever, ever. Right? But because of year and year, they keep it up. It's a picture of something. The picture of something that is always there. The picture of the uncleanliness. The unclean. And God's going to change that uncleanness to things that are clean. Not only does he remove the sins, he has to remove it completely. The actions, the deeds, the functions, the spot, the thought, the spirit, the soul, whatever you want to use it, to remove it completely out of your life. That it not one iota of it will ever return again because it was all cursed upon the goat. Right? Verse 3. But in those sacrifices, there remains sin every year. No matter what. Verse 4. Very important part here. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats. Did you get that? Bulls and goats. Didn't say lamb. Didn't say sheep. Didn't say bird. Therefore, when he came, meaning Yahshua, into the world, he said something. What did he say? Sacrifice and offerings you did not desire. That's not what you really wanted from them. Though you requested of them, that's not what you really wanted from them. What did you want from them? And he says, but a body you have prepared for me. That is, his own body was the one that was prepared to do not only the sin offering, but the cursed one. A whole offering, a sacrifice for sin offering, you have no pleasure in that. Doesn't mean he despised it because he commanded it, But supposed us to know when people get involved and believe this completely whole, and that's the way it works. He says, no, it doesn't work. And this is what this author says. If it had worked, there would have been no need for them to ever do it ever again. Ever. But year by year, they did it again and again and again. We ourselves repeat it ourselves. Because why? Not everything's completely clean in us as individuals or in a group. There's still uncleanliness. Yes, we keep put upon the new man or the new woman. But that old man and old woman still dwindles there, doesn't it? And you wish it didn't. But we don't have, neither do the Israelites have, the power, the strength, or endurance to remove themselves from themselves.
What he wants is obedience.
I understand
and
that.
He says, and he says, be holy like I'm holy. Is that possible?
Yes, that's possible. Now, what we have to find out, how is it possible? Not with humans. Humans cannot become that way. It takes something far greater than the power that human beings can do. If anyone in this room, will you think you're the holiest person around? Well, you never will say that. You'll say, I've got some flaws in me. I've got some weaknesses in me. I've got something wrong with me. I want to get rid of it. I don't know how. Who gets rid of it? The Father sits there at that Holy of Holies. He sits there in that mercy seat, and the clouds coming in there and down if the smoke. Here I am there now. I want you, Aaron, to do this. I want you, Aaron. I want you, my son, who is now the high priest. I want you now, my son, to take the sin offering, you, and I want you, my son, to remove and be cursed and get out for the sake of the people. Those are hard words. And he said, I'm coming. I will do your will. How many times did Yeshua say, thy will, not mine? When did he say that? When he was facing death. You remember the two apostles that were there? They kind of fell asleep. He woke them up. He said, Father, take this cup from me. I don't want to do this. Let's put it in word. I am afraid. No answer. He said, thy will be done. And the second time, again, he came back and he said, Father, take this cup from me. No. That's not what I sent you there for. And then he did it for the third time. He says, and the book of Luke says, he sweat like blood from his forehead. Deep agony. Deep agony. The blood from, he's sweating that the last. Yes, that's a human being. Human beings have been known that they are so anxious that blood will sweat. Rather than water, blood comes out. Because they're so anxious, they're so terrified, so frightened of it, that is frightening to them. And that happened to our Savior. Because God so loved His creation so much that He gave His only begotten Son for our sake. Does he just want a bunch of obedient rocks? That's what John the Baptist said. Oh, he can raise up rocks and be obedient to God. That's not what he's after. What's he after? Your heart. He's after you. And once we submit that part and say, I want to be part of your world, I want to be part of your heart, and I care about you more than I care about anything else, then God says, okay, I will be your God, and you will be my child. Remember the old English word obedient? You know what that word means? Listen and do. Oh, I'm going to take a bull whip to you and 40 lashes minus one? No, just says listen. And same Hebrew word for Shema. Listen and do. That's it. how? Do I want to obey and listen and do because I love him? Or do I want to obey him because I'm terrified of him? That's not his ultimate goal. He wants to be called your God. He wants you to be called him my God. That's what he wants. On the Day of Atonement, the time of covering, the time of removing, getting rid of something in our lives, personally and privately, is very, very important. When Apostle Paul, I don't know who wrote the book of Hebrews, well, I just find it very fascinating that the man seemed to be speaking to a very special group of people. And after this, what you read says, I will come and I will do your will. This is what's going to take place. Drop down to verse 16. Drop down to verse 16. This is the action of God telling the high priest, this is what I want you to do. The picture of the 16th chapter of Leviticus is a picture of the high priest doing what he willingly did, although it was not a nice thing for himself. A new covenant. I'll make them after those days. After what days? After verse 7 is completed. Verse 7 is completed. Not before. Come to do thy will. And what is the will of God? So God so loved the world that his will was to take the life of his son, that his will of people coming to him and believe him, trust him. In the very beginning, Adam and Eve didn't fully trust him, did they? And we think we're better than they. We're in the same boat. And he wants us there. His will is that we be his people. And we, what kind of people does he want? The same kind of people his son is. How was his son? What was his son like? Was his son full of iniquity, transgressions, and sin? That's what he wants from us. How does he get rid of it inside of us? He has to put the curse upon somebody. And that curse was on his son. Is that understandable? There, verse 17, and their sins and iniquities I'll remember no more. It's verse 17, did you see that? I'll remember them no more. When will he not remember them? When number 7 is completely fulfilled. Verse 7 is completely fulfilled. He's brought, he loves the world so much. That's not completed yet, is it? That task's not been done yet, has it? Yes?
Does it's your patience, God, that means he's waiting and waiting and waiting for the final completion.
Completion, right. That has yet to be completed. Is the world in a wonderful, peaceful, loving God attitude? They despise him. Did you despise God before you were baptized? Oh no, I never despised God at all. Not according to God. You were angry with him. You were an enemy with him. You didn't know it. I had no idea. I was. I didn't know. What? Me? Mad at God? What? What did that for? And he proves to me that I was. Okay. Oh my. I gotta stop doing that, don't I? is now there is a remission or for the sin, and there is no more offering of sin. Okay. No more offering of sin. Let me ask you a question. And ask yourself honestly. Don't have to answer it out loud. Since your baptism and accepted all the blood and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and accepted his death and resurrection and you've been baptized, have you ever sinned after that? Don't answer the question. So, let's suppose you have. What do you offer as a sin offering now? What do you offer him now? Broken and a contrite spirit. He will not despise. How hard is that? Well, am I broken when I sin? Yeah. Are you sorry, God? Yes. Are you pleading to God? Yes. What do you ask him? Forgive me. A broken and a contrite. Change to what you're doing. What else can you offer him? Messiah's already been dead and buried and resurrected, and you can't offer his blood anymore because once it's been blood been offered, it's been offered, it can't be offered 1,000 times. It's been offered once, is what it says here. Only once.
Can you break yourself?
Can you what?
Can you break yourself?
Break yourself?
Broken and contrite.
Yes.
Can you break yourself? Can you actually throw down your own pride and
yes.
be broken?
Yes, you can. All you have to have is a realization that you went against God and he wants something from you in return.
I have a question. Okay, so you're searching after God because God called you in the first place, okay? You're searching after God. You're crying after God. Does God answer you by putting circumstances in your life that create a broken and contrite spirit?
Can there be circumstances? Yes.
I'm saying, does he do that to someone who's crying after him in the first place because he called them in the first place?
God chastised those he loves. The answer is yes, he will. May not like it, but he does.
Calling after him because they haven't been called by him, don't get broken.
I don't know about that because I don't know them. Therefore, that's between God and them and not me. Okay? I'm not going to answer for somebody else at all. I cannot do that. I can answer for anybody in this room except for myself. Okay? It's as simple as my mind. That's how I think. You may not like it, but that's how I think. Having therefore, verse 19, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Yeshua. Why would you enter into the holiness by the blood of the Yeshua? Why would you want to do that for? By a new and living way. This is what it reads, right? By a new and living way, which he has consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, the high priest over the house of Elohim. See, the Day of Atonement is not about us, what we do. It's about the high priest does. The reason why we get to enter into the Holy of Holies boldness is because we accepted that blood. And that high priest laid his hands upon the second goat and cursed it, which is his flesh, which was his flesh. You understand that? Not too hard to understand that, I don't think. Verse 22, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of truth, having our hearts sprinkled from something, from a bad conscience, from an evil conscience, a conscience that does things that are not good. The Day of Atonement is about God, how God brings us to himself. I mean, that's the beginning. No one could go to God unless God so draws him by and through his Son. We all understand that intellectually. But do we understand it realistically? It's a little different approach. Realistically, is it for real or just a spiritual thing? How close are you to God? If you were able to walk through that veil with the new and living way, how is the new and living way? No sin. No transgressions. No perverseness. Is that not a new and a living way? That's what atonement is all about. To remove from all mankind, and even from us as individuals, those things that we can walk boldly, a very strong word, into that very special place where there's a seat and there's a cloud sitting on that seat. And you're liable to be with that cloud for the rest of your life. And our bodies wash with pure water. Not just water, pure water. And what did the Messiah say? Out of your belly will flow living water. Pure water. Water that is holy. Water that is good. And so he says in our world, this is how I want you to walk. I said yesterday, it's more important for us to not do the work of the Lord, but be like the Lord. If the Messiah came to be, quote, an example how people should live, then we should look how he lived, and we should live like he lived. And if we live like he lived, then we live like Yeshua. We don't do the work of Yeshua. We have to live by that first before he ever thinks about sending anybody out. I have never been sent out to anybody. And so apparently God's not going to send me out to anybody. That's okay. He already has plenty of apostles. He don't need any more. No more evangelists. There's plenty of them out there. I'm just up here going through this day. Hope you understand a little bit what I'm saying today. This is where Jeremiah comes in. And he says, I'll make a new covenant with you. That covenant did not come in play until after number 7, verse 7 of chapter 10 occurred in your life. If that did not occur in your life, then you don't have the New Testament. It's not part of your world. Come now, let us reason together. Come now, let us talk about what it's going to take to get you to where I am with you and you are with me. Let's get where we can be right. Yes.
You were going to speak about Hebrews 10:16. This is the covenant which I will make with them in these days. I will put my Torah on their hearts and write it in their minds. And their sins and their wickedness I will remember no more. Isn't that his goal, that eventually it'll just be in our hearts?
Right, yeah.
And obedience will come naturally.
Well, yeah, naturally, yeah. It's not forced, it's natural. You're going to hear it and you're going to do it. You're going to hear it, you're going to do it. It's a very positive terminology. In the book of Acts, just to let you know what that old English word is, that remember the damsel was sure the door? And it said she obeyed the door. What happened if she didn't obey the door? The door's going to beat her up? No, she heard the door saying something to her, and the door said, open me up. And so she went there and opened it up. And to her big surprise, oh, she didn't expect what was behind that door. Yes.
Isn't that the work of God?
It's the work of God, yes. Yes. God began a good work in you, and he's going to finish the good work in you. As God's doing the work, all we have to do is respond. It sounds simple. But human beings have a hard time responding to something they cannot see with glasses or eyes or hear with their ears with a megaphone on it. They can't even smell anything worth putting the nose. They can't even talk because they have those senses that God created them. Then if we actually saw God in the senses that we have, we'd probably do something different. But we don't. He doesn't let us see you.
He has to just recognize the voice. The Ruach HaKodesh.
Right, but the voice, what is that? I have never, quote, heard a sound ever coming to my ears or my eyeballs, never saw it. I never heard any words from anybody. Well, I know some of you probably said you had. I'm not going to judge you that, nor am I going to condemn you on that. I am one of those people that no one talks to me. No one talks to my head. No one talks to me in my dreams. No one talks to me when I'm outside walking around. No one ever utters and says anything to me whatsoever. I keep going back there because God says, that's what I said. Go back and read it. If anything, that's where I go. I'm not saying that some of you respond to what God wants you to do and you feel moved. I am not a person that's going to tell you don't do that. It's stupid for me to think that way. I myself personally have never been moved by a voice or by a sound unless it's a truck with a big horn on it and I have to get out. I can hear that very clear and get out of the way. All right. That's okay.
I get promptings all the time.
That's fine. I'm not saying you're right. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about myself.
Well, you know how I recognize those things? Because I know they're good things. Okay. I'm told, go tell that person thank you. Or, I mean, it's just like in my spirit. You know, hey, you forgot to say that. Thank you.
That's good.
Or, I mean, little, all kinds of things all the time.
I never hear those things. Someone has to tell me, by the way, did you say thank you to that person? Oh, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I have to go talk. I had to hear somebody's physical voice tell me you didn't say thank you. I had to go back and, oh, yeah, thank you. I am so dense. I don't mean that it's cynical. I really don't. I am dense. You ask my wife, half the things I hear, I don't hear. Because I'm going deaf. Half the things I see, I can't see because I'm going blind. That's just the way it is. The only thing I got going for me, I can do things in my left hand and my right hand. I can do both. That's not necessarily positive. this is the covenant I will make with those people. My law, I'll write in their mind. I'll write in their hearts. And this is the goal. This is Jeremiah 31, verse 33. This is the reason why I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And no more will anybody teach his neighbor about me, because his neighbor is my people. You won't even have to hear Richard Agee stand up here and tell you what God says. Wouldn't that be a great thing? Take a lot of pressure off of me. No, I'm being funny. I'm just being funny. For they shall know me from the very unimportant ones to the very important ones. I'm putting paraphrasing words here, you know, to the intellectuals and the non-intellectuals, to the educated and the non-educated ones, whatever it is, you know. The small little guy, this big giant guy, to make a difference, whatever it is, he's going to say they'll know me. Why? Because I will forgive their iniquities. And I will forgive their sins. And I will never bring them back into memory. Do we trust him on that? Well, that's a question you have to ask, don't you? O house of Jacob, let's just say, O house of God, what is God saying? Come and walk in my light. Come and walk with me. That's what God said. Come and walk with me. That means come and live with me. Yes.
I heard a little saying the other day, and I wrote it down. It says, I keep remembering the things that God has forgotten.
Jim, Bill.
That'd be where he wants us to enter his rest.
Yeah.
To rest in him, just relax, rest.
What is that?
All under control.
What does rest mean in Hebrew? What does a Shabbat mean in Hebrew? My place of safety. That's basic root word of it. I'm a safe place to, for you to live. Come and live with me. I'm safe. That's what it boiled down to. And that will last for as long as you want it to last, I guess, that way.